And welcome to Aviation Consumers' continuing podcast series on the world of aviation products and services. If you're about to buy a legacy LSA, a Cub Champ, or a Luscombe, say, will you be able to support a 60-year-old airplane with spare parts? Actually, yes, according to Aurora, Colorado-based Univair, one of the leading suppliers of parts and accessories for classic aircraft. This story is part of a major report in Aviation Consumer Magazine on legacy LSAs. Here's Paul Bertarelli.
We're speaking today with Mike Sellers, who's Director of Marketing and Sales at Univair, which is the leading supplier, or at least one of the leading suppliers of parts for classic airplanes and now what we're beginning to call a legacy LSA. Thanks for being with us today, Mike. We'd like to start by getting some sense of how supportable these older airplanes are. And we're talking about J3 Cubs, Champions, Luscombes, Air Coupes, and so forth. Which many of our readers are interested in buying for LSAs because they're selling their conventional airplanes. And my sense of looking through the Univair catalogs and on the website is these things are quite supportable. You have a lot of parts for these airplanes. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. One of the reasons for this company to have come into existence in the first place, and that's what we work pretty hard at to try to keep available. Our emphasis has always been on structural parts. For example, spars, struts, control cables, elevators, ailerons. We haven't concentrated things on like doorknobs and interior panels, but things that are really necessary to keep the thing up in the air.
How far back does Univair go?
The founder of the company started out with another gentleman here in the Denver area back in 1946. At that time, there were just a couple of guys out of the service just trying to do what they could to put groceries on the table. But there was a huge number of these airplanes that were built immediately after the war because we had such a huge manufacturing capacity. These airframe manufacturers were anticipating a lot of these guys coming out of the service and buying airplanes. And so there was about 46,000 aircraft produced immediately after the war, but the market never quite materialized. The market was glutted, and a lot of these manufacturers were either put out of business outright or put in pretty shaky financial condition where they subsequently folded within another year or so. And the founder of this company, J.E. Dyer, saw an opportunity where a lot of these airplanes were quickly orphaned, but there was no product support for them. We started out as a salvage yard, but a lot of the commonly requested items, such as struts, spars, wingtip bows, were quickly picked off, and so we started manufacturing parts.
And at that time, this would have been post-World War II and into the early 50s. What kind of airplanes were being orphaned at that point?
Well, the Taylor Craft was one of the airplanes that bounced around during this period. We acquired the rights for the Swift, I believe, in 1955. The Air Coupe was acquired about that same time. We acquired the Stenson 108 series aircraft from Convair during those years. At one time, we owned Mavion. Luscombe has bounced around at various points. We've never owned them, but they had fallen on hard times and have gone through several hands. So a lot of these airplanes that we're referring to as now legacy airplanes, we've called classic aircraft. They just had hard times, you know, trying to compete in a glutted market of these tomb and four-seat aircraft.
How do you determine what parts to make and what parts to keep in stock for these older airplanes?
Well, that's an easier asked question than answered. The easiest way to answer it is, first of all, we listen to our customers. So it is demand-driven. But then the next thing we look at is it something that is within our manufacturing expertise? You know, can we make this or can we go out and buy it? We prefer to make things if we can, but that way we have more control of our own destiny. Can we make this thing at a price that ultimately the market will bear when we're all finished? We also have to look at the price that it takes to bring a part to market, what sort of tooling costs we have that are involved, and then coming up with the PMA, the Parts Manufacturing Approval, all the paperwork, the engineering cost that goes into that. There's several thousands of dollars of engineering time that could be wrapped up into that. That's quite expensive. The lead time for these things, there's just a whole host of things. What sort of a production run that we'd have to have, how many items we want to put on the shelf. It's a real juggling act. A lot of work goes in before we put something on the shelf.
Let's say that I bought an older Champion, and I want to maintain that. What parts are you most likely to have, and what parts am I going to have trouble getting?
Well, something that we would have right away that we try to keep on the shelf would be your things like your wing ribs, the steel tip bows we have, the control cables, the ailerons, cowling for that aircraft we have, things that we don't have but are available from other sources would be like the wood spars. We do carry covering materials for the aircraft. There are also other suppliers out there that carry that. We do not carry things like the interior bits, the seats, upholstery, and things like that. Again, those are available from other suppliers. So the availability of parts, if not from us, they're available from other sources. So that airplane particularly is one of those kind of hidden treasures out there that's been kind of passed over in favor of things like the J3 that I think are good buys out there that are quite supportable, vis-a-vis something, let's say, like a 1946 Funk, mm-hmm. which the parts availability isn't too good on that, or say an old Interstate. But by comparison, the old Rocket Champ is very supported.
If you were looking at some of the popular, what we call legacy airplanes, which you call or have been called classic tail draggers, what do you think is the most supportable of the bunch?
We could just about go back and build, say, a J3 Cub from stock. Haven't done it, but I would say that we probably could if we were challenged. The same thing with, say, the P-18 Super Cub. So those are two airplanes that we probably could, based on just the size of our inventory and, you know, my experience of selling parts for it and, you know, overall knowledge of the airframe and knowing what we have and what we haven't. But those airplanes are very, very well supported. Plus the fact that Piper, as a lot of the airframe manufacturers did, they tried to use as much parts from one aircraft to the other, which was one of the beautiful things about those old Piper fabric-covered airplanes, was the commonality of parts from model to model. Those two airplanes are very well supported.
Are you sensing a groundswell of interest and demand for parts on these older airplanes as LSA kind of gains steam?
Well, I think that it's always been there. You know, we might be looked at as an overnight success, but we've been doing this for 60 years. We just, you know, aren't new to the scene. The LSA changing regulations here has made these things much more visible, I think more viable to people. They certainly blend themselves to be aircraft for entry-level aircraft into the market. They're certainly attractive to people that maybe, say, at one time had current medicals that have lost them for whatever reason but want to, say, remain in aviation. It's given different aspects to the flying market that maybe didn't exist before. But the airplanes have always had a fair amount of utility, be it for just working. You know, these airplanes are still used as fire spotters or for banner towers or whatever. And so they've always been around. They've always been laboring. The pig guys have maybe had the airplane that Dad picked up from the factory. I'm always amazed at the stories of these airplanes that are resurrected from the proverbial barn. Because of the simplicity of their construction, they lend themselves to be repaired. If they get wrapped up in a ball in the ditch, they're more easily repaired than, say, an aircraft like a Cessna that if it runs off the runway and it's damaged or flipped over in a windstorm, they aren't as easily repaired.
So it sounds to me like this market is a pretty steady, kind of a bright spot here.
Well, it is, and I've been tracking the number of aircraft on U.S. registry now for at least the last 20, 25 years. And the number of aircraft for a given model type, whether we're talking about Stenson or J3 or a Ronca 7AC, the numbers of aircraft on the books are amazingly static. So if we lose an aircraft to an unfortunate accident, it seems like there's another airplane that comes out of one of these barns or some rusted frame from behind somebody's hangar that somebody decides, hey, this is maybe worth putting the money into, or this might have been a piece of junk to somebody 4 years ago. It's now somebody's treasure that's worth resurrecting. And so these numbers on the registry are just amazing how year after year, while these airplanes haven't been built since the late 40s or early 50s, how those numbers still remain static after all these years.
Well, we're certainly getting a lot of interest from our readers. Mike, I'd like to thank you for talking to us, and we'll look forward to meeting you at Oshkosh, I guess.
Anytime, Paul. Thank you very much.
And you can read more about this and other great stories in the upcoming issue of Aviation Consumer Magazine. And you can check it out online at www.aviationconsumer.com. Be sure and check out the Aviation Consumer Bookstore. 400-plus titles available and same-day shipping. Comments on this audio cast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. Thanks for listening.